The National Football League returns. Sunday, the Cleveland Browns return against the Cincinnati Bengals. What does this year have in store for our football team? Gentleman who has joined us many times over the years, and we love having him with us, one of the great football guys in our country, in our estimation. He's Robert Mays from the Athletic Football Show, and he joins us on the Fan Hotline. How are you, sir?
Hey, Robert.
Doing well, guys. How you doing?
There is a guy in Guatemala who's pretty good, too, so we're just going out on a limb on that one.
Well, I said our country. I didn't want to leave the Guatemalan guy out.
Well, he's pretty good, though.
Yeah,
except I can't understand it because I can't.
Robert, I deal with this every day.
Sorry about that.
I apologize.
Listen, I wish my Spanish was better at this point, too. I'd be listening to more Guatemalan football content.
No mas. No mas.
Okay. You got a Browns defense going up against the Cincinnati Bengals. Let's go game specific here. That has had trouble protecting Joe Burrow over the years. Is that how the Browns can beat the Cincinnati Bengals, or should we just think, okay, well, who's in week two?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think those Browns-Bengals games have always been a little weird. You know, I remember 2 years ago, we weren't really sure what to expect. I believe they started in week one against the Bengals in 2023 as well. And we weren't really sure what to expect from that Browns defense, and they just came on like an absolute tornado in that game, and I think really announced what they were going to be that season. And I do think that even with some of the personnel concerns on that side of the ball, we can see a little bit of a bounce back from that team. You know, if you look at some of the underlying numbers about what the Browns defense was in 2024, I mean, down to down, this was still a pretty good defense. Their problem was they didn't create any turnovers and they gave up a just disgusting amount of explosive plays. And that can normalize from year to year. And so I absolutely think there's a world, even with Martin Emerson hurt, even with some of the question marks at linebacker and the defensive line depth, et cetera, that this defense can still be a pretty good unit and maybe surprise a few people.
When you look at the Browns offensive line, I mean, the names to me are all familiar, right? Teller, Posick, Petonio, Jones, right? And Conklin. I don't know what to expect. I really want to believe that they live up to what they've been their career. I'm just super concerned about the way they look, especially with Joe Flacco. If I was Flacco, those are the guys I'd want in front of me, but I'm concerned. What say you?
It's just hard to rely on the health of most of those guys at this point. They've all missed at least a little bit of time over the last couple of years. Obviously, it's been more pronounced with Conklin, but I think the injuries have really slowed Wyatt Teller down. I still feel like if this group stays healthy, they can be a pretty good unit over the course of the year. You know, DeJuan Jones is never going to be a dominant run blocker. It's just not really the style that he plays with. He's a capable pass blocker. And if he can be your fifth best offensive lineman for 17 games because the rest of those guys stay healthy, I do think that this can be a pretty good group. And I think that can be one of the reasons the Browns offense is just more competent than maybe a lot of outsider observers think it's going to be. I just think that the issue is not only whether they can stay healthy this year, but when I think about the Browns, I just look at like the 2-year outlook and the fact that that entire offensive line is hitting free agency. And that's what makes me a little bit itchy when I just think about the multi-year view of this team.
Robert Mays joining us, his podcast, The Athletic Football Show. Kenny Pickett messes up his hamstring, so much for a quarterback competition for the starting job. Did the Browns do the right thing by trading Kenny Pickett before they had a chance to see him run this offense in anything that resembled a real game?
I think so, because they got a decent return for him. And at this point, I think when you drafted two quarterbacks and you signed Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett was always a little bit superfluous when it comes to the overall equation for what that quarterback room was supposed to be. I think that with Flacco and the young guys, you have something that he's proven, right? If he's anything, we kind of know what Joe Flacco is, for good or for ill at this point. And so if you want to go with that, you have that. And if you want to see what you have in the young players that are unknowns, you have that. I feel like Kenny Pickett was kind of a backstop that would have been necessary had they not drafted two quarterbacks. And so right now, I still feel like your best chances are, all right, let's have Joe Flacco in there for a little tiny bit of stability. And then when we're ready to start exploring the unknown, we can go to that. And in no part in that timeline is Kenny Pickett really necessary. And so that's why I always felt like if there was one guy that was going to go here, it was probably going to be him.
What's the timeline for you if you're going to change quarterbacks?
You look at those first 5 or 6 games, and they're pretty brutal. I mean, the first game is against Cincinnati. We'll see what happens with their defense. But I'm not looking at it in front of me, but I think the next 4 or 5, you got the Lions in there. I think the Ravens are in there. You got the Packers in there. There are some good teams. And so I think that having Flacco in there to just kind of you know, take his lumps, figure out what this team is over the first 5-6 weeks of the season. And then depending on where you're at, then at both the quarterback position and in the season at large, do you look at what the benefits might be of playing some of the young guys? So I think that we'll probably get to around Halloween or so before that starts happening. But after that, I think if, unless you're really, really rolling, unless you're like a 7 or like a 5-1 team at that point, surprisingly, I still feel like that's probably when we might see the young guys start to play.
Thoughts on Quinshon Judkins and when the league might actually hand down some kind of response, or is it no response, or are the Browns like, is there a problem with signing him to a contract? Is that between the Browns and him, or are they waiting for the league? And if we're waiting for the league, then the Browns also are probably waiting to hear if they're going to say anything about Isaiah Bond, or if they're going to say anything about what Devin Bush.
I truly don't know. I mean, there are just so many different unknown variables in the air, like whether or not the league wants to have its own disciplinary process, what that means for whether the Browns want to sign him to a contract. I mean, it's just, there are so many layers to this that we don't typically see. And the fact that he hasn't been signed yet obviously is one of those. So I'll be honest with you, I haven't been paying a ton of attention to it. It's one of those where when we get the final response, we get the final response and I'll react to it then. So I wish I had more insight than that, but I really don't.
Robert Mays joining us from the Athletic Football Show. Your thoughts on Dillon Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders, not necessarily this year, but what type of a career do you think those guys could have? Are they worthy of time to see if they can be a quarterback of the future here?
I think it's two different sort of timelines, right? I mean, I think in a lot of ways, if you look at just the way Shedeur's built, some of the throws he's made in the preseason, some of the throws that people have seen at training camp, he's probably a more talented quarterback than Dillon Gabriel is. And that's why coming into the pre-draft process, even if he was never a first-round pick, he was always going to be a day-two pick. And I'm not sure everyone necessarily, or most people thought he had the talent of a day-two pick, I mean to say. I don't think most people saw Dillon Gabriel that way necessarily. I mean, the fact that he went in the third round was a little bit surprising for some folks. So I always felt like with Shedeur, the flashes you saw talent-wise, if there were other kind of quieter elements to his game, the procedural stuff, playing on time, that he could hone as he got more experience, he was always going to have a higher upside. With Gabriel, I think it's probably you're shooting for what a good career backup looks like. The problem is, I think that Dillon is further along, and so the timeline of like who's ready to play this year might not necessarily reflect who's going to have the higher ceiling moving forward. And I think that's something the Browns are probably having to work through right now, and they're probably going to have to work through as we get a little bit deeper into this season.
Is everybody chasing the Ravens in the AFC North?
I think so, yes.
Yeah,
I think that the Ravens last year, if you look at any sort of advanced numbers that you want to look at, the eye test, I still feel like for most of last season, they were probably the best team in the NFL. Like, obviously, you're going to have blips every once in a while. The Eagles played them really well. But, you know, when you have the most efficient offense in football, one of the most explosive offenses in football, when you're blowing out good teams, I mean, when you do what they did to the Broncos, to the Texans, they had a ceiling that I don't think any of the teams in the NFL had really until the Eagles got going late in the year. And they bring back most of the component parts of that team, especially on offense. And so right now, I think they're probably the best team going into it, let alone in the AFC North, I think in the entire NFL.
Robert, is there enough time for Gabriel or Sanders to show the Browns that they don't need to draft a quarterback next year? I find that a preposterous idea, since they're sitting there with two picks in a draft where a lot of folks think five quarterbacks, six quarterbacks, maybe even could go in the first round.
I think that bar is going to be really hard to clear.
Me too.
I just think if you're going to be going into next year's draft with potentially a top five pick of your own, plus a pick that may land in the top half of the first round from Jacksonville. And when we were talking about the Browns season long outlook, I think the line I kept going back to was with your pick, the Jags pick, or both picks, you are very, very likely going to be in a position to draft a quarterback next year. And if that's the case, you're picking from a different sort of bucket when it comes to the level of prospect that you would have been this year. It's just a different situation. And so passing up on that sort of quarterback option when you don't have an established one is really difficult. And I just don't think either of those guys are going to assert themselves in such a way that is going to push the Browns off of taking a guy if they believe one is there to be taken.
In a way too early question to ask, was there a quarterback that jumped off the page to you this weekend in college?
I watched not a second of college football this weekend, so I am very much the wrong person to
ask. That's okay.
It
was worth asking. I thought it was worth asking.
I'd love to fill you in and tell you who they're going to draft, but we don't know yet. But by golly, we're going to be following it, Robert. Why? Because this is Cleveland.
Listen, switching over your point of focus from the NFL team to whoever the top quarterbacks in the draft are is an annual tradition where yes. I'm from as well. So I can tell you that I'm very, very familiar with that.
Yeah, but you have one now in Caleb Williams.
We'll see.
We'll see. Maybe you have one. If you're the Browns, can a good defensive line, and I'm hoping that they're good, and I'm hoping they maybe become great, is that enough to propel you, forgive me, to mediocrity, 9-8, 8-9 off a three-win season?
I don't think that's enough on its own. I also think that, especially when you look at the way the Browns play, it has to go in tandem with a defense that's playing really good man coverage on the back end. And that's what they were in 2023. And I don't need them to be the 2023 defense, but I think part of the reason that they fell off a little bit last year is that you just didn't get quite the same level of play from the guys in the secondary. And obviously it's going to be harder to get there without Emerson, because now you get worse at two positions moving Newsom back outside. But I still feel like in order for them to be that sort of defense that can make them like a fringe 500 team, it can't just be the front. You also need Denzel Ward, Newsom, the safeties to really click into something, at least bumping up against what they were 2 years ago.
All right. Answer this question as we say goodbye after this question. So Kevin Stefanski needs what to make sure that he's here next year if he wants to be?
I think it's proof that this is a good situation for a young quarterback. Because if you look at what they were on offense over the last couple of years, they were lost. They were just totally lost. Part of it was the play they were getting from the quarterback, but part of it was also them doing everything they could structurally to get the most out of the quarterback. How spread out the offense was, how RPO heavy the offense was. It just strayed so far away from the bones of who Kevin Stefanski has been as an offensive coach. And I think in order for you to feel really good about this group moving forward with both him and Andrew Berry, I think two things need to happen. This draft needs to be one of those drafts. Well, we're coming out of this and saying we got four starters that we feel good about from this group, and then we'll see what happens with Judkins. That's the front office part of it. And then on the coaching side part of it, with Kevin, Mike Bloomgren being there as the offensive line coach now, Tommy Reese being the OC, can we bring this back to a place where, oh man, how are they doing this with the offensive personnel that they have? We weren't doing that for the last couple of years. This was the worst offense in football. And so I feel like Kevin Stefanski is showing us again that this is a hospitable environment for any quarterback you drop in there, whether it be a top five pick next year, Shedeur Sanders, Dillon Gabriel, whoever. This is that type of place. I think that's what needs to happen for us to feel good about this group moving forward.
Robert, always a pleasure.
Thanks, man.
The Athletic Thanks Football time, Show, Robert's podcast. Go listen to it. Thank you, buddy. Robert joining us on the Fan Hotline. Did you hear Bill Belichick's postgame press conference after North Carolina got shellacked by TCU?
I did not, but I did hear the pregame interview he did with Holly Rowe, who was on our show last week.
Coming up at 12:40. We'll hear some of that postgame stuff. We just had Robert Mays from the Athletic Football Show, good podcast, on our show. And I asked Robert one thing that we've kicked around numerous times, and he was in agreement with what we've both said, Andy, which is because of the situation this year, we all think it's unlikely that the Browns' young quarterbacks, Dillon Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders, will have enough of an opportunity, and it's opportunity even more than anything, to play long enough, to play well enough, to convince the team, yay, we've got our quarterback of the future, and we don't need to draft one next year in what's supposed to be a good quarterback class, and we're going to go over that coming up at 1 o'clock. We're going to see how some of these guys did this weekend, and we're going to do that every Tuesday during the season. Okay. We're going to keep tabs on these guys, because you think, I think, they're going to draft a quarterback next year.
Yeah, I just don't know what round. Like, if they think
numero uno, sir.
Well, it is the NFL, and I'm not wishing injury on anybody. But Jeff, Andy. Gabriel or Sanders could be on the field as early as this week.
Oh yeah,
and so for us to kind of crush the dream of opportunity, it's one snap away. I'm not trying to give you the, hey, you got to be ready because you're the backup quarterback role, but I do believe that if you give one of these two guys the opportunity to lead this team for a significant, even if it's just 5 or 6 games,
but
you're giving them the opportunity to win the job this year.
No, next year. Do you really think 5 or 6 games of seeing one of these rookies play will be enough to make the Browns think, yeah, in this draft where people think that at least 4 and maybe as many as 6, tying an NFL record, quarterbacks will be taken in the first round, that the Browns will be confident enough to pass up one of these guys? I don't think so. And I would love to sit here and say yes. I don't see it as possible, to be perfectly honest. The only way?
Worst case scenario, you think that Sanders or Gabriel is your starting quarterback next year, and you have 2 first-round picks going into next season's draft, right? And you hang on to both of them, and you draft 2 guys worthy of being good. Now, for one of them to win the job, you would think the Browns' natural pick would have to be on the other side of 15. Fair? The Browns' natural pick is going to have to be on the other side of 15, which would mean that one of these two guys had a decent season.
I'm not going to judge the rookie quarterbacks by wins and losses. I don't think that's fair.
Well, if you're not, then you're drafting a quarterback and this whole conversation is moot.
Which makes me wonder this, and I've thought this all along. They made the trade from 2 with Jacksonville, dropped down to 5, and picked up an extra number 1 next year, knowing what kind of a quarterback class this is going to be next year.
Okay.
And there are a lot, there are up to 9 guys who are getting some buzz that they might be first round picks. Now, okay. There won't be 9, but there might be 6. If you knew you had 2 number 1s next year, and yet signed Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett, and you knew chances are you're going to draft a quarterback next year because you're going to have the opportunity. Why the heck did you draft 2 this year?
I don't know. Jeff, I will shake my head over and over because now you're talking about 2 draft picks that were, unless...
And it's going to be tough for both of them to play, Andy.
Unless they believe that Gabriel or Sanders is going to be a backup on this team for a very long time. But a very long time for a backup quarterback is somebody who's going to get antsy and want to get out of here at the end of their rookie deal.
Well, can you imagine? Let's just throw this out there. Can you imagine this scenario? Because I can't. You drafted Gabriel and Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
You have Flacco. Joe's 40.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine all 3 of those guys coming back with a guy you draft in the first round next year?
No, that's
not
happening.
Imagine both Gabriel and Sanders back next year with a guy you draft in the first round?
No.
I can't either.
They need some sort of a veteran.
Right, which makes me wonder, well, then why the heck did you, why'd you draft 2 when you had 2
first-round? Because maybe you can showcase one of these guys and get a fifth-round pick out of it.
The only line of reasoning that has ever made sense to me when it comes to why they took both of those quarterbacks is the obvious reason, which was they looked at their board, they saw Shedeur Sanders sitting there and said, that's the highest guy on our board, let's take him. That is the only reasoning I have heard that I've ever went, okay, well, then that makes sense. If you just followed it in that direction, I'm going with that because it's the one that makes the most sense. It's like, yeah, this guy was the highest guy left on our board, so we took him.
They have so many other holes. They could have done something else.
But we sit there and scream, follow your board. Don't draft for need. Follow your board.
If you think you get it, you have to do that.
In the fifth round?
Yeah,
I understand that
anyway.
Early. If you're in the fifth round, you already have 2 quarterbacks on the roster. You already have 3 quarterbacks on the roster at that point. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to draft Sanders. It just didn't.
If that was the highest guy on their board, it does.
You're taking dice rolls anyway in the fifth round. That's just being ridiculous at your own board. You're going to tell me that they couldn't have brought in another wide receiver, a fifth-round wide receiver. They couldn't have brought in another defensive back. They couldn't have brought in another offensive lineman that could have helped out this team more than quarterback. It's like at some point, you've got to say the dance card's filled with quarterbacks. We got to find someone to dance with. And they already had 3 quarterbacks at that point. This is not a rip on Shedeur at all. This is like, why? Why did you do it? And if the only reason is because you trusted your board, You're being blind.
Especially. Why
did you pick a guy in the third round then to play quarterback?
With two first-round picks next year in what's supposed to be a loaded quarterback draft. It doesn't make sense.
It's a head shaker. It just makes me think that you drafted one to trade.
It's the only line of logic that I can look at and say, okay, I get it. That's the only line of logic that I can wrap my head
around. Dan, you're absolutely right. Jim's in Strongsville. Hey, Jim.
Jimbo.
No, this just took an ugly turn.
Yes.
There's a bigger issue with taking Dylan Gabriel in the third. I mean, this thing you guys keep talking about, and I understand where you're coming from, not being critical. You're like, well, you thought you could develop one to trade for like a fifth round pick. Who are you going to trade this year's third round pick for a fifth rounder next year? That's why this is so bizarre.
So, Jim, let me ask you this.
Shadur for a fifth round pick. Well, you used a fifth to get him. Why would you?
If they would have just stopped at Gabriel, it changes everything.
Or drafted Sanders in the third.
Or drafted Sanders in the third, which would have been fine too. Yeah.
I don't get it. And this book, I mean, this draft could turn out to be awesome. Like, I don't know why this organization does things that, like, seriously, we have to make up reasons why it makes sense. Because it doesn't. It's bizarre. I mean, it's just the strangest thing. Like, this, you're right. This whole offseason's been offset because we took two rookie quarterbacks. And you're absolutely right. You can't draft one in the first round next year and bring these two guys back. It's just not going to work.
It couldn't. Could it, Jim? I can't imagine. Could you imagine the
no way.
Could you imagine the noise coming out of Shadur and his fans if they draft a quarterback number one next year and they bring him back?
And let's face it, the reason that Joe Flacco was let go of last year was because they didn't want the competition between Flacco and Watson going into last year. So if they were so sensitive on that, what makes you think that what's next year going to look like? And by the way, I know everyone wants to say he's going to be gone, but Deshaun could still be here and could be healthy.
He's going to be a June 2nd cut, Andy. That's the one. I do disagree with you on that. You keep saying that.
I hope you're right. But what makes you think that common sense is coming into play? This whole argument about Gabriel and Sanders makes me think that no one knows what's coming.
I mean, I've heard you say before, return on investment. Look, for a billionaire like Jimmy Haslam, when he says they took a swing and a miss, look, there is no return on Deshaun. Him playing isn't a return on investment from his perspective. I mean, the money spent, the money's gone. It was an investment that failed. He already ready to move on. So I just don't. I don't know.
Is he?
I hate this quarterback
situation. Is he ready to move on? Do we really know that? No.
I'm depressed now.
I know. Sorry.
Sorry, Jim.
It's all right. Enjoy your holiday week. All that's over too. Your holiday weekend's over too.
Welcome back.
I've just added to the depression.
Jay's in Solon. Hello, Jay.
Hey,
welcome.
Jay.
What's up, y'all? What's up?
How are you?
It's been a while.
We've missed you.
Hey, man, we got to realize that these owners, they like sit at card tables, and this is why it don't make sense. They sit at card tables, and they do real gambling. And they'll get a player and hold a player and send a player to a team. We got to act like it's a lot of backdoor stuff that's going on here. That's why we're so confused about so many different things that happen in this league. Hey, I just can't wait till the Browns start. Hey, good luck with all the quarterbacks. I hope everybody stay healthy. Let's utilize these tight ends because tight ends are winning Super Bowls nowadays. Hey, man, great show as always.
Thank you, Jay.
Appreciate that. Freese is in Akron. Hello, Freese.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Very well.
Hey.
So I love the point that y'all made about the quarterbacks as far as, like, why did they draft them or whatever, but I have one question.
Yeah.
So Deshaun Watson is still under contract, and from what I've been hearing from you guys, it's possible that next summer he can get cut and there'll be some dead cap money. But what if he comes back from his injury and he's looking like the Houston Deshaun Watson?
You know, Freese,
I want to hear your answer on this one.
No, what Freese just said is something that hasn't left my mind the whole time he's been here. It's like, is that guy still in there somewhere? You know, everybody, and boy, they were very, very different. But everybody was all excited that Flacco went 4-1 when he was here for five games in the regular season. Freese, that same year, Deshaun Watson went 4-1. Now, he didn't play real well, but the Browns won four of his five starts. And I've wondered the same thing that you've wondered, Freese. Is that guy in there anywhere anymore? Because if he is, I want him as my quarterback. He was damn good.
Do y'all think our fan base has had enough of Deshaun Watson to not give him a chance?
Yes, but the fan base doesn't matter. The coaching staff does.
Well, here's the other thing, too. It had enough until what? If they threw him out on the field and they won his first game back?
And he threw for 320 yards.
Heads would change. They would change. You know it as well as I do.
Reese is laughing because he knows.
Well,
thanks,
I'm kind of looking forward to that because that'll answer our quarterback question, right?
It's another option. Gosh. I just don't.
All right, Freeze. Thanks.
Shaking my head.
Yeah, I'm shaking my head, too. John's in Columbia Station, where Trent Richardson used to live. Hi, John.
Yes, he did. Actually, I have a couple ideas here. Okay. I think they should take Shador. Well, actually, they missed a great opportunity. I think they could have shopped Shador to Dallas and could have got Micah Parsons. I think Jerry Jones really, really, really would like to have Shador.
Well, bringing him back to Texas. Sure, he grew up in Texas.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that was one thing.
Trade him straight up for Dak Prescott.
Did he have a house in Arlington Heights?
You'd
Does
have
that
a quarterback.
Exist?
You'd have a quarterback.
Arlington Heights, maybe, where the King of the Hill crew is. I don't know.
I would go with your guys' idea. Go ahead and draft another quarterback next year. But you could also use him for fodder. We need some linemen. I mean, our linemen are getting older. Betonio came back from retirement. Doesn't say he won't retire this year after this season. You're going to have a – there you go. You're going to miss an all-pro guard.
All right, John. That's very warm and cheery.
Did you go to that retirement ceremony? I don't remember that.
I did not go to that retirement ceremony.
I don't remember that. Dan, did you get invited to that?
No.
I think we missed that one.
I almost cried last
invitation
night.
Invitation got sent to an old address.
Ah.
Who dis? If you're on hold, stick with us. We'll get your phone call. But I almost cried last night.
Oh, why'd you cry, Jeff? Why? Tell us.
Involved an old friend.
Oh.
Who didn't sound like his usual old grumpy self.
What?
His name is Bill.
Love will do that to you, Jeff.
Is that what that was?
I think so.
Or is that just like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm coaching in college now. We're going to hear with Bill Belichick after the game last night. Coming up on Baskin and Phelps. But before we get to something that almost had me in tears last night, George is in Cleveland Heights. Hi, George.
Hey, George.
I can't tell you too how much I enjoy your show.
Hey,
but I could try. Deshaun, new and improved. I believe that Deshaun is our, in case of emergency, break glass quarterback. And Dylan Gabriel, obviously a pick of Kevin Stefanski. They're thought partners. They walk alike. They talk alike. You can lose your mind. Shador Sanders, I don't believe, was Barry or Stefanski's pick. That video clip that we saw of the two of them, you know, just following the announcement of the pick that Stefanski claimed was just out of sync, I believe that that was the honest look on their faces when they got that call from Jimmy Haslam. And Shador's pick has Haslam's fingerprints all over it. Just like I don't believe that Deshaun Watson was Barry's or Stefanski's pick. And thanks for hearing me out.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we're listening.
All right. Haslam likes flashy quarterbacks. He likes narcissistic quarterbacks because Jimmy's a narcissist. So we're going back to Johnny Manziel and Deshaun and now the drama queen Shador, where Haslam's doing. Barry and Stefanski were following their draft process. We didn't let Shador fall to us. We traded up to get him, which makes no sense at all. And you spoke a short time ago about how the acquiring of Shador just doesn't make sense, and it doesn't. And I don't believe the issue is, do we Cleveland fans like Dylan? The issue is, does Stefanski like Shador? And I appreciate you offering me the opportunity to express my thoughts.
There, George.
Thank you, George.
It's one of the reasons we're here.
Yes.
Thank you for the phone call.
Jeff,
that.
Can we just do a little inside baseball on that shot?
Group sigh.
Three, two, one.
You mean draft Kevin Andrew Berry with Jimmy behind him?
We've been a part of too many productions in our day, and I kind of don't believe that was. It's not in real time.
It doesn't have to be. Can be in real time, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, I don't think it was in. I mean, either the producer made a decision to roll it back from the moment the pick went, and then roll it, or they punch to it hot. And if they punch to it hot,
that's TV talk right there.
But if they punch to it at the moment that you see it on,
punch to it hot.
If you see that at the moment that the pick went out, that when we all found out, I mean, they had known for a good minute and a half that they were picking him at that point. That's why I kind of question what that video really is or was. Because, you know, like when they go around, sure. when someone gets picked in the draft, they often go back and show you the moment of that pick.
Yeah.
And you see all the family and friends go crazy. Like, I don't know. Did they cut to it immediately after? Or if they did, that means they were probably a minute 30 away from when the pick actually happened. When you see the families go crazy, they're seeing it in the same real time you are. Or like during the NCAA tournament.
Andy's going TV on me here.
Well, Jeff, am I right or wrong?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Speaking of television.
Yes.
Last night, the debut of the Bill Belichick era with the North Carolina Tar Heels. He took over a football team. I think they were 6-7 last year under Mac Brown. So, you know, it's not like he took over Alabama after Saban. 6-7. Bringing a lot of different guys, trying different things. Opening drive, went right down the field, scored, 83-yard drive, something like that.
I thought they looked good on that
first
drive.
And then they got smoked. That was it 48-14? I don't even remember the final score because it's insignificant.
Yeah,
41 straight points, I think it was, that TCU put up. Point is, they got smoked. After the game, Bill Belichick had to do his first post-game college press conference. And I will tell you, I was curious. I was wondering, what's this going to be like? Is it going to be like his NFL, where he treats the media with complete disdain, doesn't bother to answer a question unless he wants to, isn't necessarily cordial? And it worked for Bill. I'll never say that he needed to do better or differently, because it worked for him.
Mm-hmm.
That was his thing. He won Super Bowl, just won six of them. Did great. But I wondered, what's it going to be like when you are representing a school and an alumni base and you need donors? You don't just have to please Robert Kraft. You've got to suck up to people you've got to put out a good face for your team,
yeah,
for your school.
It's Bill. I don't think he cares. I don't think he cares about donors.
You might think he doesn't care, but listen to the way he answered questions last night.
Can I set the stage a smidge on this, dude?
By all means.
So Bill Belichick is doing this on a stage in front of a podium where he's standing.
In a hoodie.
In a hooded sweatshirt with a Carolina blue and white balloon arch behind him.
Okay.
Just wanted to make sure everyone knew that.
Okay. And Bill responded to questions in this fashion.
They just outplayed us. They outcoached us. I mean, they were just better than we were. That's all there was to it. They controlled both sides of the line of scrimmage. Their skilled players played well, and they did a lot more things right than we did. So, you know, give them credit for being the better team. They certainly deserve it.
Did he go to media training? What? You too at the Kevin Stefanski School of Answering Questions can give answers with insight like that.
Like real words, not just.
Bill answered that question. Let me give you the NFL equivalent. Had that happen, he was coaching New England. We got our butts kicked. Next question.
On to Cincinnati.
We got our butts kicked. Next question. Do I need to say anything more? We got our butts kicked. Next question. But no, he kept getting questions. He was asked about the message and all kinds of different things. Here's another Bill answer from last night.
You know, we played competitively, but then just couldn't sustain it. So obviously we have a lot of work to do. We need to do a better job all the way around. Coaching, playing, just wasn't up to what it needs to be, and I know we're a lot better than that. So give TCU credit. They came in and did a good job, and they were clearly the better team. They deserved to win, and they did it decisively.
I almost cried.
Who are you?
I know. I almost cried.
Who are you?
I got to be honest. This isn't Bill.
Yes, it is. It's the real Bill. I'll be honest with you. This is real Bill. I think it is.
What do you mean, real Bill?
I think the Bill we saw in press conferences in New England after it was like – Bill not wanting to be there. Bill not wanting to deal with the media. Bill having the power.
That's the real Bill.
That is actually, it's not the real Bill.
This is the Bill. I'm representing a university, and I guess I have to be something other than rude.
What was Bill like his first year back in 1991?
I covered Bill when he was here in 1991.
Yeah.
And he didn't go out of his way, and that was okay. I mean, he was not a delight to deal with.
Jeff, I watched him once do a skit on Channel 8, how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. It might have been on his own show, the Bill Belichick Show.
The Bill Belichick
Show. I watched him do an entire skit about how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. He has personality. He just chose not to show it.
Yeah, for like 29 years.
My favorite was the my favorite was the draft when he put the dog at the chair. Was that during the pandemic?
That was great on ESPN.
That was probably one of my favorite moves he's ever made.
It was weird to listen to Bill say politically correct things and do things that, having listened to him since he came to the Browns, made me think, oh my gosh, it's not, oh my goodness.
Hmm. Yeah, it's not the typical Bill we're used to seeing, but I think...
Can he pull that off moving forward?
Not if they lose like this again next week.
And some of the questions that were asked, and I'll, the guys are sitting there doing their, press conferences with different media outlets, but some of the questions that were asked, and I was listening to it on ESPN last night, made me think, uh-oh, if this is the NFL, he's going to rip this guy. What's going to happen? TCU certainly played a terrific game, and they deserved to win. They played much better than we did, and I thought, wow, come on, man. It's not Bill.
Jeff, at some point, if he gets frustrated, he's either going to send Michael Lombardi or Freddie Kitchens down to do the interviews.
He can do that.
Who's going to find him? Who's finding him? The ACC?
Maybe. I don't know.
Who's going to – and does he care?
Maybe the university president. Hey, we're paying you a lot of money. We hired you because we want you to be the face of this thing.
It is so cute that you think that anybody has more power than him there.
I think this is a different deal, Andy.
I don't.
He had to make one person content in New England, and that was Bob Kraft.
Yeah.
You got a lot of people you're dealing with now. I mean, you got a fan base, and it's not a pro fan base. Pro fan bases, people buy their tickets and they call us and they screaming for their team. College fan bases write checks. And if you don't put out the face that certain people want you to put out, or if you embarrass my university, well, I'm not writing you the check. And then all of a sudden, the athletic director's like, ah. And then all of a sudden, the president's doing the same thing. And all of a sudden, Bill's getting called into a meeting. Hey, you can't be a jerk in press conferences. This isn't New England. And he's like, well, I don't care. Okay, well, good. Well, then Freddie Kitchens is going to get the job. Let's go. Freddie will be nice.
I'm sure they had this conversation 1,000 times before he took the job.
I'm sure they did.
And I am sure
that. But can he pull it off?
Bill is not going to change.
He just did. He just did.
I'm telling you that when
it's. Dano, cue up another one of those softball answers.
I believe this is who he's been his entire career.
No, I disagree with you.
He has. We choose to dwell on the times that his fuse was short.
Play it, Dano. Play it.
You know, we played competitively, but then just couldn't sustain it. So, obviously, we have a lot of work to do. We need to do a better job all the way around. Coaching, playing, just wasn't up to what it needs to be. And I know we're a lot better than that. So, give TCU credit. They came in and did a good job. And they were clearly the better team. They deserved to win, and they did it decisively.
As opposed to in New England, we sucked. What more do you want me to say?
Jeff? If he doesn't want to do the press conference, he's going to send Michael Lombardi he is going to send Freddie Kitchens. I mean,
no,
he's got guys that have NFL.
Son Steve.
Or he'll send his kid. He could send. I mean, I'm
not Mike happening.
Mike Prefer's won an
Andy,
NFL playoff
coach
game.
Is the
he
guy.
Could go.
The head coach is
right?
the head coach is the king of the kingdom.
He could send Mike Prefer to the press conference every week.
Belichick was the NFL equivalent of a college head coach. He was as close to a college head coach as you were going to get in the NFL. Where it was his kingdom.
Okay.
It's not Kevin Stefanski's kingdom. It's not even Mike Tomlin's kingdom.
It's not like, by the way, I enjoyed listening to Nick Saban last night. I thought he gave more insight than we've heard. And by the way, did you not hear
him? Well, he's allowed to now. That's his job now. Hi, give us insight, will you?
I don't know. And then he had Bills back because they were former, buddies at the Browns?
Pals with the Browns.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Nonetheless, Bill made me cry.
No, you didn't. Stop it.
It felt bad for him, if you want to know the truth. I really did. A lot of guys played college football over the weekend who will be under consideration to be drafted with a first-round pick by the Cleveland Browns. We started today our look at next year's potential first-round draft choices for the Browns. How'd those quarterbacks do coming up on Baskin and Phelps?